Well, good morning and happy Father's Day. And if we did not have already in place a day set aside to celebrate moms, then we would have to create one. And if we didn't have a day set aside to celebrate dads, then we'd have to create one. So whoever is responsible for that way back there when, we are grateful that we have time to pause annually. Roy and I, through the years, always tried to emphasize not the same points, not the same lessons, but always tried to emphasize important dates like this as a part of our Bible study, as a part of our worship, because these are the two most important roles, along with being husbands and wives, moms and dads. These are important roles that really do move the world, our world, and shape the future. Common theme here appears to be the idea of a tie. And I noticed that Bill Wade loves ties. He has really a wide array of ties. He's just humble, you know, and he doesn't wear them very often. But you'll see a tie here, and you'll see on our worship bulletin that there are ties that some of you might be interested in. And we appreciate Jennifer putting together that for the cover of our worship bulletin today. And I don't know about you, I may be one of the dying few, but or dying many maybe, that loves getting ties for any occasion, but especially for Father's Day. And I'm grateful to celebrate Father's Day with those of you who are dads and grandfathers. And I was commending Bobby Highsmith a few moments ago before we started on being a great father and a great grandfather, and then we got to talking about the little ones that are his great-grandchildren. And he's looking for number 10 coming up pretty quickly. And that is a great thing to celebrate, and great families have the opportunity to do so together. Okay, our emphasis today is a little different. What are some gifts? Rather than thinking about what fathers ought to do and what fathers ought to be, we're giving some givens here that someone who is a member of the Lord's family and who has been a part of the Lord's family for some time has been taught and schooled, not only through Scripture but also through example and various other experiences in life, how to be a father. I think that probably all of us who had our very first child, when the moment of the birth of the child, of course, our first concern was for the mother and for the child, but immediately after that was, we've never been a dad before. You know, what do I do now? You don't seem to think about that during the months of pregnancy, but when that baby arrives, what do I do now? And life forever changes from that time forward. I want us to think about what gifts a dad would really like to receive. Ties are nice. But gifts that dads need and deserve. I want to talk to you about the gift of love. I'm talking about our children and our grandchildren giving back rather than thinking about fathers giving. And when you think about the gift of love, I think about 1 John 4:19 that makes it very clear we love God, our Father, because He first loved us. In fact, long before we knew anything about the nature of God or that there is a God that loves us with everything, long before we learned that, He loved us. And as the psalmist would say, He fashioned us in our mother's womb, which makes all of us unique and different and distinctive, and that's what makes life so interesting. Well, like God the Father loved us before we ever came along, so does your Father love you before you ever came into the world. And so we are to love Him for various things. I'd like to ask you, our young people especially, to focus on loving your Father because of His character, not because He is a character, but because of His character. That is his virtues, not merely his vices, his strengths, not merely his weaknesses, and to focus on helping him to be an even better father. Upon his example, the example that he strives to follow, especially in bringing you to this particular building and various other places for the purpose of worship, for the purpose of fellowship, for the purpose of Bible study, and for all the occasions that bring us together. Cal Ripken Jr. is remembered, of course, as the shortstop for the Baltimore Orioles, who had the ability and the strength, but basically the determination, to break Lou Gehrig's consecutive game streak of 2,130 consecutive games. Now, when you think that a Major League Baseball player today misses a game from time to time, if not for a very minor injury, just to have a day of rest, you think about 2,130, 22, 2,300, whatever it wound up being for Cal Jr. His explanation for that was simple. He said, "I have never known anything else. I watched my dad get up every day and go to work. And because he was in the field of baseball, that included early mornings and very long nights. But he got up every day. He worked a full day. He worked a long day. He gave it everything that he had. And I've never known anything but that." I don't know how much that Cal Sr. ever discussed with Cal Jr. Now, when you start playing Major League Baseball, you're going to play every single day. I don't think that decision was, or that discussion was ever had. Cal just says, "I watched." And obviously the Lord blessed him with great health and ability. We ought to love our fathers because of their work ethic and because of the protection that they provide, because of provisions that are provided us. We need to love him because he loves us, giving us life. And every father that I know would be especially quick to put his life in danger to save the life of his son, his daughter, his bride, and others, sometimes even strangers. And so we ought to love and respect and give on Father's Day the gift of love. I don't know how much it is said in your home, "I love you." But there should not be a day that goes by where that is not said. Now, I know that there are ways of expressing your love through demonstrating all the good things that you might do and provide. But there's something about words. There's something about words. And the words that are affectionate and the words that are emotive, that go to the very depth of our souls, are words that we build our lives upon. I'm always sad when I hear someone reflect upon the times of a different generation and said, "My dad never told me that he loved me." Well, I feel terribly sorry for that child. I feel even more sorrowful for that father. And so we need to express our love, but we also need to return that love and make that a part of our daily life. Let's talk about the gift of respect. Ephesians 6:2 quotes the fifth commandment of the Ten Commandments, to honor your father and mother, for this is the first commandment with a promise that you'll live long upon the earth. To honor a father means to respect your father. You're not going to agree with him. You're not going to agree with your mom. I mean, that's one of the things that makes us human, about everything. But you're going to find that you're going to agree more and more as you go forward in the future. About dads, we need to respect them for the age they are. There are some young fathers, for sure. And then there are some fathers who become fathers even at an unexpected time. You know, Abraham and Sarah both laughed at the Lord himself when told that they were going to have a child at the age of 190, respectively. Well, That was a different time, of course. But age and knowledge and experience, the knowledge that we attain by growing up ourselves and going through the various experiences that life brings, provides a gift that fathers give generously. And then when you think about the burden of leadership, there are great followers. In fact, for there to be leaders, there have to be great followers. But when we come home, we are also leaders. And therefore, we need to respect the burden of that leadership. It's kind of like when Truman said, "The buck stops here. There is no responsibility beyond here. There is no accountability higher than here in this office." Well, that's true of dads at home. Mom is the heart of the home, but dad is the head of the home. And ultimately, even as they jointly make their way and make decisions, he's going to be held accountable for how well he has fulfilled that role of leading his family. And the ultimate thing that we want them to do is to lead them to the Lord, to lead them to be faithful, to lead them all of their lives with the hope of heaven. Respect him by the way you address them and by the way you treat them. When I hear a student refer to me or call to me and say, "Yes, sir," or "No, sir," that has become so rare in the last number of years that when someone still does that, I pull them aside and I said, "You are going to make an A. I'm promising it because I love it and I think it's the right thing to do." Now, our good friend Ron Butterfield recently told me that up north in upstate New York, they don't do that because those terms do not mean the same up there. Well, they ought to. They ought to. And it's not just your father. It's people who are your father's age that you respect. You do not know perhaps what all they have accomplished, but you do not know what all they have been through. And so you call people sir. You call people ma'am. And they may say, "Oh, don't do that to me." Well, that's fine. If they don't want it, that's fine. But you do that in my class, you're going to make an A. So the way we treat people is very, very important. Fathers want the gift of purity. Oh, my. Is Proverbs filled with statements about purity? We began with the idea of Paul telling Timothy to keep himself pure. He's talking about in the context of not hanging around those who are bent toward sin and sinfulness. Even after having discussed the matter of spiritual gifts, he very quickly goes to the matter of sin and sinfulness and says, "You keep yourself pure." That does not mean that we can be perfectly sinless. Oh, wouldn't that be a wonderful world if sin did not exist? But if that were the case, we would not need a Savior. And we would not long for heaven like we do, as we have just been singing about being there. Purify your thoughts. As Solomon says, as one thinks in his heart, so is he. So much of a person's character begins with the way that he thinks. And if we are selfish, self-centered, self-focused, always looking out for number one, and not concerned about those around us, how much we can help and be of help to people, that's going to determine the kind of character that we have. It's going to lead us then to say certain words, certain language. And Solomon again tells us, like apples of gold and settings of silver is a word that is fitly spoken, or a word that is appropriate for the right situation in the right circumstance. You know, there can be very short expressions that one person gives to another that completely changes the outlook that that person has on his present situation. Have you ever had that happen to you? Just a few words, even a phrase. Purify your thoughts, your words, and then your desires. My son, if sinners entice you, do not consent. You know, that's what happens a lot. By ourselves, we may be strong. But if we're running with a crowd where regard is not for that which is true and right and godly and good, then we'll let those folks influence us. They'll either influence us or we'll influence them. And so as we think about the gift of purity, what greater gift could a child give to his or her father than to remain pure? And then finally, the gift of wisdom. Again, Proverbs is filled with great statements. We do not have time or space to look at all of these. On our worship bulletin today, well, actually it's the second one here, "Listen, my son, and be wise." That was mentioned on the cover. But "listen to your father who begot you" is what we started with earlier today. Proverbs 23:22. All of these are from Proverbs 23. Here is an image from verse 26 that I really love. "Give me your heart, my son, and let your eyes delight in my ways." You know what that says? I can't make you do anything, ultimately. I can't force you to do anything unless you are willing to do as I have taught you. Give me your heart. And with the help of God, I will help you mold your heart into a heart that will be pleasing to God. 24 of that chapter, "He who sires a wise son will be glad in him." In fact, will rejoice in him. And in fact, will rejoice in him all the days of his life. Boy, how about that for a gift? And so the gift of wisdom. On our trip recently, some friends of ours from Clarksburg, Kenny Peterson, told me the story when we were visiting together one day about how that he joined the Air Force after a semester at Freed Hardeman. It was in the height of the Vietnam War. And he wanted to join the Air Force and to be a part of the effort. And he had two different deployments to Vietnam. About 2 years out of the 4 years were in Vietnam at the time of the war. And he said simply, and we weren't talking about Father's Day or anything like that. I don't remember what the conversation was about, really. But he made this observation just a few days ago. He said, "You know, when I left home for the Air Force, I thought my daddy didn't know one single thing in the world. In fact, I thought he was the dumbest guy I'd ever known. And when I came home 4 years later, I found out he was one of the wisest." It's amazing how much he'd learned in 4 years. That's very similar to a quote Mark Twain said about his own dad, isn't it? But that came from Kenny Peterson, and I think we can relate. Here's some life lessons learned. In other words, benefiting from the wisdom of those who are older, who have more experience, who have knowledge, leads to wisdom. And just along the way, various father figures. I've picked up little things like the ones I'm going to suggest. One I intended to include was, experience is the best teacher. We've all heard that, right? But the rest of that statement is, but the tuition is very high. Now you dwell on that and see the implications of it. Okay? I like the wisdom from a father who said, it is always right to do what is right. Now you can say that in any number of ways, but think about some of the situations you've been in. You're really trying to choose between this and that. There may not have been right or wrong involved. But when there is right or wrong involved, it is always right to do what is right. I learned from Brother Gardner that there is a solution to every problem. He was a father figure of mine, and I miss him very much. There were many times at school, especially when I was younger, and I thought, what in the world are we going to do now? We have this problem facing the school. And with his calm resolve, Brother Gardner would remind us there was a solution to every problem. I believe that. That's benefited me tremendously. I appreciate the wisdom of a very wise elder who many years ago, not referring to church work or ministry or anything like that at all, just made the observation one day, you never want to leave a place you can't go back to. You know, what he's referring to was places of employment. Now, sometimes we can get so upset and so bent out of shape, and we say things and we do things that we burn bridges that cannot be rebuilt. But if you live by the adage, I do not want to leave a place or a position to which I cannot return. There are going to be people there that I love. There are going to be people there that I'm going to want to see and hear from. And that's how I'm going to operate, the Lord being my helper. What a tremendous bit of wisdom. I'm not seeing that in print anywhere. But an elder in the Lord's church. And then there is nothing more important than going to heaven. Well, that's pretty obvious, isn't it? Well, if it's pretty obvious, why is it that we're letting everything in the world get in the way of us going to heaven? Someone here needs to respond today because you're allowing something or someone to get in the way of you going to heaven. It might be you. It might be your own indifference. It might be your own lack of commitment and conviction. But someone needs to respond to say, I am not certain that I'm on the way to heaven. And I want to know. God's grace makes it available. My obedience to His grace will make it certain. Out of all of these statements, this is the most important. There is nothing more important than going to heaven. Close today with a little adage here from a gentleman named Clarence Kellen. My father didn't tell me how to live. He lived and let me watch him do it. That might seem to indicate to you that there was not much verbal communication there, but that's not the case. You cannot be in this role without a good discussion of right from wrong, do's and don'ts, virtues as well as vices. You just simply can't. It comes with the territory. There are standards, and there are rules of behavior, and there are laws of acceptance and of unacceptance. And this is what makes a civil society when people live according to a standard on a large basis, a wide basis, a broad basis. But there is something to be said simply by watching as well. Example along with words, to back up the words, to show that the words are real, words are true. As we think about the Lord's life on the pages of Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, oh, that's why I love that study, because not only do we have the words, but we have that marvelous example in every situation. Every situation. Just watch. What would the Lord do? Follow me, he says. And if we will do that today by having our sins washed away, being baptized into his life-giving blood, we can know that we have the hope of heaven, that it's real, and we rejoice in it. We're a different people. We are a joyful people, and we spread the joy. Don't keep it to ourselves. If there's someone who needs to come today for prayers for any reason, we're here to welcome you and to help you in every way that we can while we stand and sing.
I love to sing.